Patrick Henningsen and TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, today's news talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Thank you so much for joining us on this beautiful Thursday. This is a live broadcast. We're in the third hour right now. I'm joined in studio with my guest, running shotgun here, Basil Valentine.
Hello. Good afternoon, Patrick. Great to be here.
It's great to be with you, Basil, and thank you for the wonderful hosting and the hospitality.
Oh, it's the least I can do.
Here at Valentine Towers.
It's the very least I can do.
Yes, indeed.
If I can just chuck in this vignette very quickly. It's one of my favorites. The late Liberal MP, Clement Freud, who was a nephew of Sigmund Freud. Quite a colorful character, liked his horse racing. And he won a lot of money betting on himself to win the by-election. I think the constituency was Ely in Cambridgeshire in the early 1960s when he was first elected an MP. Ladbrokes were offering 33-1 on him winning the seat. And he had a big bet on himself and won a lot of money. So he suddenly found himself in the House of Commons and would find himself when in the constituency being approached by members of the general public to whom he had written letters as their constituency MP, offering either condolences for the death of a loved one or congratulations on a winning football team or an art, all sorts of things. Constituency MPs get letters from constituents about absolutely anything you can name. And of course, people would approach him in the street and say, "Oh, Clement, thank you so much for your letter." And he had no idea who they were or why they were thanking him. Who is this woman? Does she run the local hockey team or netball team? Or has her husband just died? And, you know, he had absolutely no idea. So he came up with this brilliant catch-all response, which was whenever somebody approached him in the street and thanked him for his letter, he always just said, "Oh, it was the least I could do." And that worked in any scenario. So whether it was the bereaved widow, "Thank you so much for your letter. It was the least I could do." Or whether it was the captain of the winning local football team, "Thank you for your letter. It was the least I could do." It works every time.
Yeah, there's a lot of utility in that.
Yeah.
A lot of utility.
Yeah, that was a different era, you know. That was before the word disinformation had entered our lexicon. And looks like it might be disappearing out of it again rather quickly.
Mm. Well, let's hope so. Let's hope so. So I guess they finally called quits after so much ridicule and just getting slammed, even by left-wing pundits. We're basically saying this is a bridge too far. To have a Ministry of Truth in the United States run under the Department of Homeland Security and this hysterical maven, Nina Jankovic.
Yes.
Was a 33-year-old, unhinged ideologue.
Yes.
The perfect person you'd put in charge of the Ministry of Truth, right? I mean, she's resigned, apparently.
Well, fortunately, I don't know whether it's coincidental or what, but she's become pregnant, suddenly discovered, you know, and
She said, "I'm resigning to, I need to spend time with my family." And so she was just tweeting before this, "Big things are coming. I'm heading the new Department of Disinformation Governance and whatever." And now they've decided to basically pull the plug and mothball this thing. They say, we're going to hit pause, which means it's dead. And that she's resigned.
Yes, the word on the street is it's dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing.
Oh, it's the best news we've had all week.
It was a non-starter.
By a long way.
It was a non-starter. Did they really think they were going to make that fly?
Well, one wonders whether they were afraid of lawsuits as to, you know, testing the veracity of claims. I mean, first of all, it flies in the face of the First Amendment. Mm. So, yeah. You know, unless you're shouting fire in a crowded theater, you know. One man's disinformation. So if they were going to start censoring things which could be proved in a court of law to be true. I mean, this is the thing. What we're witnessing now is attempts to circumvent the law like this, to short circuit the law like this. and I'm very
political. It's a political device.
That's right.
It's a tool. Joseph Stalin invented the word disinformation. This is my understanding of the etymology of that.
Wow.
And that was to ridicule and to demean his political opponents.
Yes.
He would accuse them of being spreaders of disinformation.
Yes, very successful. Disinformation and conspiracy theory, which of course came up in the late 60s. I mean, that's public knowledge now, though not everyone knows it. It's a term introduced into the glossary by the CIA in order to discredit anyone who had different ideas about what happened to John Kennedy.
Mm. Yeah, that's where it comes from.
That's where it comes from.
Hugely successful.
Hugely successful.
So this one, are they trying to do another, quote, conspiracy theory, injecting a term in?
Yes, very much so.
The same thing.
Very much so. Now we've got to win the battle in the UK. We've got the so-called online harms bill, which, as you were saying yesterday, threatens to be every bit as draconian as whatever they were proposing in the States. And of course, we don't have a First Amendment here. We don't have a written constitution. There's been talk of a Bill of Rights since we exited the European Union, but, you know.
So it's a little bit more, it's a little bit sneaky, the online harms bill.
Very sneaky.
And they're very clever how they're sort of pushing it through to protect young people from online bullying and,
yes,
and grooming and stuff,
yes,
like this.
Yes, yes,
but
yes.
There's already laws on the books for the
child
abuse and grooming and targeting kids by predators. There's already laws on the books. I mean, the police investigate those cases actively and constantly. But the fear is with this is, Basil, they're going to extend the remit to cover speech that contains disinformation. And if that's, and that wording is in,
yes,
in the legislation, if that goes through, that gives a huge amount, an arbitrary hand really to go after anything, say vaccine, anti-vaxxer disinformation. So today's quote disinformation will be tomorrow's fact.
Right.
That's what's happened with COVID, hasn't it, on so many different fronts?
Yes, except there have been very, very little public come down with respect to COVID. As I mentioned in the previous segment, the Office of National Statistics in the UK have finally published all-cause mortality rates, distinguishing between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. And in 2021, all-cause mortality is much higher amongst those who've had the injections. Simple as that. And we won't see that on the BBC News. That should mean the immediate halt of the injection program. Overnight, immediate. Mm. And it, 20 years ago, it would have done. 10 years ago, it would have done. But, you know, no, I very much doubt we'll even hear anything about it on the corporate media.
And what do you think? What if there is a data drop on fertility rates? And this was revealed. Would that not be a national crisis?
Absolutely.
I mean, would that not be the ultimate? If a mandatory experimental pharmaceutical injection en masse has a dramatic effect on fertility rates.
And mortality.
Is that not the mother of all scandals?
Of course it is.
Scandals.
Of course it is. But we're through the looking glass. We've entered a new era, really, in the last. It's been coming for over 20 years. You know, we're paying the price for living on a bed of lies, you know, going back decades, if you like, but really accelerating in the last 20 years. After 9/11, and the last couple of years doubled down again several times in terms of the degree to which corporate media rams fear-based propaganda down people's throats. You know, we're living now through an era of trauma-based mind control, and you know, a lot of people are still too traumatized to contemplate any possible alternative scenario, you know. And corporate media aren't going to be challenged to run big stories on how the vaccination program is actually a tremendous disaster, you know, the biggest medical fiasco in history. It's too much, you know. So instead, we get nothing. But, you know, the people at home, as Harold Wilson used to call them, are well aware of what's going on. You know, people are dropping like flies. The only, in the UK, the only television station that's covering it at all is GB News. But, you know, even there, I don't think they're tuned into quite the scale of it.
Yeah, because the implications are massive. And that means that anybody who wasn't asking questions early on, they then are somewhat culpable in allowing the situation to continue to fester.
Yes, and the vaccine injured and relatives of those who've been killed, they're marginalized, vilified, ridiculed, not counted properly. You know, the even the counting mechanisms are heavily skewed, you know, so that I think if you collapse within a few days of the injection, it doesn't count as having been caused by the injection. I must, you know, look into that in more detail. But put it this way, I think the real figures are much worse than even the ones the Office of National Statistics are admitting to. Much worse.
Yeah. No, there's all sorts of little loopholes in how they count. Yeah. You know, if it's a two injection, they don't count you as fully vaccinated until you have the second. Mm-hmm. So you could have your reaction after the first, but yep. You won't be seen as vaccinated according to the record keeping. I mean, it's so bent. It really is just incredible what's been allowed to be gotten away with on this. And I mean, you know, there's characters in the UK like Matt Hancock, you know, the former health minister, who, you know, should own a lot of this because he was so supposedly in charge during the time when this was all being kind of done, decided, and rolled out. And he's kind of a Tony Blair type character. He reminds me of this kind of ultimate deep state functionary.
Yes.
Who would never admit that he did anything wrong, even if his hand was the one that signed the order to bomb or have such and such done. And so we see this is like the ultimate thing, isn't it, Basil? For the ultimate death in politics is having to admit, these days, it's having to admit that you did anything wrong.
That's right.
They'll do anything to avoid this. They'll never step down and do the honorable thing. They'll never go up and do a mea culpa. It's always deny, 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 because they don't want to undermine their next gig, basically. And even if they're caught red-handed, the last thing they'll do is admit that they made a mistake and anything went horribly wrong.
Well, it's the same with, you know, the World Economic Forum, as we were talking about earlier. There's a sort of authoritarian groupthink. So long as you stick to the script, you will be protected by the inverted commas powers that be. I mean, look at Blair. Fortunately, he's still widely despised by the British public for being the snake that he is. But he's made a lot of money in the last 20 years since he stepped down.
Huge.
He still gets on the TV, on the BBC, give him a platform all the time, you know. So no question of him going on trial for war crimes anymore.
He was pushing vaccine passports.
Of course he was.
He was saying the unvaccinated shouldn't be able to participate in normal public life.
He will be again, I've no doubt. You know, we won a battle in that war, but I don't think the war's over yet.
These people are just like, it's like the mold in your bathroom. They never go away.
No.
What does it take to get these people to retire?
I know.
Here's another one, George Bush.
Oh, this was great.
He made a choice comment we'll share with you. So George Bush was giving a speech. I don't know what the organization was. It was one of these sort of, you know, rubber chicken dinners at one of these things. And so they're talking to him about the war in Ukraine. And so they're asking George W. Bush, you know, what he thought about this and, you know, what it means and so forth. So listen closely to what he says. This is George W. Bush, the guy who was in charge during the Iraq War, giving his little history lesson, but he's kind of slips up on what he says. But listen closely.
In contrast, Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq, too. Anyway. 75. Here's the
and he just they just laugh it off.
I mean, that says it all. It really does. That tells you everything you need to know. I mean, first of all, he sounds semi-senile now, too.
He does. He's kind of slurring his speech and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, he was never that bright to begin with.
No, he was not the brightest bulb in the box.
You know, the ultimate stooge. I mean, talk about the hypocrisy. So he starts off talking about how Russian's elections are rigged, but he won two rigged elections.
Yeah. And Biden won one just to...
He lost in 2000, if they counted all the votes, to Al Gore.
Sure. Yeah.
And he lost in 2004 to John Kerry. And that was all rigged in a very similar way to the way it was rigged for Biden.
2000 in Florida, 2004 in Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark Crispin Miller outlined a lot of this.
He did a terrific book on it.
In his book.
How the Republicans Stole the 2004 Election. At that time, Mark thought that elections, so did I, were going to be routinely stolen in favor of the Republicans. But in fact, they're routinely stolen in favor of the deep state, the oligarchy, the powers to be behind the throne, pulling the strings.
So
Biden was their guy because Trump's a populist and the rest.
So now pushing the WHO, the pandemic agenda, all that smart cities, new normal, great reset. The Democrats are going to push the agenda forward for the deep state. So therefore, they will benefit from the rigged election.
Yes.
Right.
And until further notice.
Until Until further notice.
Until people get tired. I mean, the older you get, I used to really believe in...
We're going
to
take... Hold that thought. We're going to take a short break here with TNT Today's News Talk. I'm in studio with Basil Valentine, and we're really getting... we're going for a deep dive right now. Just hold on, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Dolores Cahill on TNT Radio.
They're engineering these cycles, right? If they know they want to have a cycle by changing the value of the loan to asset ratio, or that if the banks and the regulators work together and they know a cycle is coming, they can profit by it and also use the downturn in the cycle to claim the assets that they didn't actually own initially.
Exactly right, Dolores. What if you, as Kevin said, if you study history, what they do is they inflate assets and then they strip them from the people that they allegedly lend money to. When you understand how the money system really works, there are no loans as such, not in the way that they portray them to be. So what they do is they inflate, it's boom and bust. There should be there's no reason for boom and bust economies. It's created deliberately so that people can have their assets inflated and then taken from them. And then you rebuild, assets get inflated and they take them. The whole model is based on asset stripping. That's banking.
Weekends with Dolores Cahill on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on the 21st of May.
You wouldn't trust a gamble with your savings. So why do you trust the government with your super? Superannuation will not be compulsory under the Lib Dems because we believe you know how to manage your finances better than the government does. G'day, I'm Campbell Newman, and I'm your Queensland Senate candidate for the Lib Dems. I want to talk to you about the fifth policy in the Lib Dems Freedom Manifesto, voluntary superannuation. Superannuation has been endlessly fiddled with for three decades. Constant rule changes make it the most complex part of personal finance. And because it's so heavily regulated, you don't get the best investments possible. Our superannuation policy will do four things. Firstly, make superannuation voluntary. Employees should be given the option of taking their entire income as PAYG income and opting out of super contributions. Most employees will continue to choose building their retirement nest egg through super, but other people live in different circumstances. Perhaps their money is best spent on caring for a loved one who's in the last years of their life, or investing in a business that they're growing. In any case, the choice to spend or to save should always be in the hands of the consumer. No more increases to default superannuation rates. We reject the increase from 10 to 12% as a dead weight on business and employees. Simplify self-managed superannuation funds. Self-managed super funds are notoriously complex and expensive. We support the simplification of self-managed super so that the average person can have more control over the investment of their retirement savings. Finally, enable entrepreneurship. An ambitious entrepreneurial-minded person in their early 20s will get into business much sooner if they can access their savings. Once in business, they'll employ people, provide value to consumers, and grow the economy. It shouldn't cost you an arm and leg. just to efficiently save for your retirement. This policy will put the power back into the consumer's hands.
To find out more, visit ldp.org.au.
Authorised by John Humphreys for the Liberal Democratic Party, Mount Waverley, Victoria.
Bad government, climate change alarmists, vaccine mandates. The threats to your freedom are many, but that's where we can help.
Hear more truths.
TNT Radio.
All the time.
Our truth shall set you free. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. Thank you so much for joining us on this wonderful live broadcast. And in the previous segment, we were joined by bestselling author F. William Engdahl. We're breaking down the WHO pandemic treaty in all of its gore. And we're in the next hour here. This is the final hour, the third hour. I'm joined in studio with my cohort, Basil Valentine. We're broadcasting live from the south coast of England. Beautiful Brighton. Brighton Fringe Festival is on. The city is teeming with activity. And
certainly is. We'll be back out there later tonight.
Artists and actors and musicians, and there's cabaret acts and all sorts of things going on. So it's really it's a fun time to be down here. And we're at Valentine Towers broadcasting now with Basil. And Basil, so before the break, I think the George Bush clip,
it merits another listen, doesn't it? Because it's absolutely classic. It's one. It really is one for the ages.
It deserves another pass.
It does. It? Yeah.
So let's listen to this again. I want to pick out a different point on this, but let's listen. This is George W. Bush, Bush Jr., as he was known. Not the brightest bulb in the box, as we said.
Total stooge, massaged into power.
Right, yeah. And he himself was the beneficiary of two fraudulent elections, which we said before. But here he is again. We're going to break this down. I've got something to say about this. Here's Bush again.
In contrast, Russian elections are rigged. Political opponents are imprisoned or otherwise eliminated from participating in the electoral process. The result is an absence of checks and balances in Russia and the decision of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine. Iraq, anyway. 75. Here's the
So that reminded me. Remember when Joe Biden made that gaffe, and he said, "We have assembled the greatest election fraud."
That's right.
Organization. It was a. It was
That's
a,
right.
A Freudian slip.
That's right.
We're meant to think it's a gaffe, but it's a Freudian slip. This was the same.
Yes.
This wasn't a gaffe. This was a Freudian slip. Iraq's on his mind.
Yes.
And so they have the fawning crowd there at the think tank event, and George Bush is the keynote speaker, and he throws out a whopper like that, and everyone's just kind of giggling. Is it? But people in the audience know.
Well, I mean, the sheer naked, unbridled hypocrisy of what he's saying there. I mean, the two stolen elections that he won, and then he makes reference to political opponents being eliminated. Well, that happens regularly in the States. One senator voted against the Iraq war, Paul Wellstone. He met an unfortunate end in a plane crash.
Oh, I remember that, yeah.
You know, so...
was he from Minnesota?
That's right.
Was that Paul Wellstone?
That's right.
Yeah, a very dodgy time.
Exactly. And then as for the invasion of Iraq, well, one can make a very strong case that in international law, certainly in terms of the sort of immediate circumstances, Putin's invasion of Ukraine is far more justified than the 2003 invasion of Iraq. Far more reason for it. I mean, you've got, first of all, the historic ties between the two countries, the fact that the border was arbitrarily imposed during the Soviet era, the fact that 15,000 ethnic Russians have been killed in the East, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whereas while Saddam was no choir boy, and he'd been persecuting Marsh Arabs and Kurds earlier in his regime, after 1992, 93, after the first Iraq war, when he was cooked out of Kuwait, he was a busted flush. And he knew that, you know, one false move and he was going to be gone. And so, you know, his sons, Uday and Qusay, were, you know, running around with Russian hookers and all the rest of it. but he didn't pose any threat to anybody. He was, you know, remember, of course, you know, he was used as a proxy to fight Iran, you know, back in the good old days when Donald Rumsfeld came to visit. But by the time of the US invasion in 2003, he was a busted flush. He wasn't doing anything to anybody. Yes, he ruled the country with an iron fist, you know, and that's Tony Blair's only get out. Oh, he's still would still just as well we got rid of him, you know.
When they say Tony Blair, do you regret lying about WNDs again? And he says, well, if the question is, do you think the world is better off without Saddam Hussein? I would say the answer is yes.
That's right.
That was his answer.
I mean, but you know, people forget the carnage that was unleashed in that country in the years subsequent with the sectarian killings. At one point, people were being dragged out of their cars, and if they were Sunni or Shia, they were just shot on the spot. There was an absolutely dreadful period of bombings at markets.
Well, the U.S. Trained the death squads in there. They tried to create a Shiite paramilitary wing that was kind of under U.S. control that was doing the kind of sectarian bullying and the hits, basically. And it backfired on them massively, as did ISIS was a byproduct of the U.S.
That's right.
Trying to manage militants, and it backfired badly.
I mean, it was the absolute hell on earth there for 10 years after the invasion. It's just about sort of quietened down now, I think. I think you can sort of just about go about your business, you know. But, you know, the good old days of Saddam, as it were, the Ba'athist Party, pan-Arab nationalism and all the rest of it. You know, there were excellent universities. Women went to university. Nobody was forced to wear the veil. Iraq was actually one of the most advanced and culturally and educationally civil countries in the whole region. As I say, that doesn't excuse Saddam gassing the Kurds or all the rest of it. But remember, once again, another parallel with Ukraine, the borders of Iraq were drawn up in colonial times and do not reflect the various populations. It's just another chunk of the Ottoman Empire that, you know, draw some lines here in the British and the French about 100 years ago. Mm. You know, so it's a made-up...
Sykes-Picot Agreement.
That's right. So it's a made-up country in the first place and could only be ruled, certainly at that time, by a strongman, you know.
Mm. And the other thing you said that was very interesting parallel is you said the West used, the U.S. and Britain used Saddam as a proxy to fight the Iranians.
That's right. And very happy to do so.
And today they're using Zelensky as a proxy to fight the Russians.
Right.
So that's an interesting parallel. Yeah. Do you think they'll meet similar demise at the end?
I think Zelensky's, well, at the moment, he's got his feet well and truly under the table, hasn't he, with Western leaders. It's the latest showbiz opportunity, you know, go to Ukraine and have your photograph taken with Zelensky, you know.
It's like a theme park now, Kiev.
Absolute
war boss. Theme park. Yeah, he's got the green undershirt, and you notice that the tenor of his voice changed when the war started. Before, he used to have more of a high pitched voice. Now his voice is very deep and scratchy.
Right.
I am Zelensky.
Right.
Send us the tanks. Show us you're real Europeans, and give us the weapons, and give us the money. We need $7 billion a week operating costs. You know, the guy's just like using the West.
Nobody knows where the money's going.
It's a cash point.
Nobody knows where the money's going.
Never seen anything like it. You know,
it's a lot of money, $7 billion. I mean, you know, it's an awful lot of money for what, unless I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, for what amounts in its totality to a series of relatively small scale skirmishes, right? Mm. We're not seeing pitched battles with 60,000 men on each side.
No.
It isn't Stalingrad, is it? No. It's not, you know, D-Day.
No. And a lot of the weapons are getting liquidated by Russia not long after they enter the country, seized, liquidated. Some of them are defective Soviet era kit that the Europeans are unloading in there. And the Americans are coming in the back door with the new kit to sell the governments of NATO. On it. So it's a little bit of a racket on that side. But here's an interesting story, Basil, that I wanted to pivot to. on this. Actually, before we got a couple minutes before we go to the next break, the Australian elections are coming up. And TNT Radio did live coverage of Australian Freedom Day previous weekend. And it's an exciting time politically in Australia, Basil, because out of the lockdowns, out of the horror of what we saw with Dan Andrews and some of these...
Scott Morrison,
but Michael Gunner, some fanatical regional governors,
yes.
Northern Territories I'm talking about, but also what we call the People's Republic of Victoria, Chairman Dan, as he's affectionately known to his opponents. Born out of that has been a huge political awakening in Australia. There's a huge surge in interest in politics, independent parties. Now, there's two thoughts on this. Obviously, you have a federal system in Australia. So in that sense, there is a lot of autonomy on the state level in Australia. So, but in terms of COVID response, in terms of the policies, there seems to be a streamlined effort for most of the territories, pretty much doing the same thing on this, and at the expense of the people's freedom, at the expense of the people's rights. So it's been a big wake up call. It's caused a huge reaction and awakening in Australia, like in Canada as well. In my opinion, Australia and Canada are definitely leading the way globally in showing what the people can and what the people should do in response to tyranny. But the elections are coming up. Is this going to be a major realignment? We're going to see. And this is the problem. When you have too many small parties, is that going to work in favor of the large parties? Just in basic, the numbers.
To be perfectly honest, Patrick, I don't know. I don't know whether they're PR or first past the post. Yeah. I think they've got a degree of first past the post because members do represent constituencies. They represent specific geographical places. I don't think it's simply a list system. But according to the New Scientist, it's our old favorite climate change to the front of everybody's mind, and their parties are trying to outdo each other. With the degree to which they're going to reduce carbon emissions.
Oh, no, please
yes.
not.
Oh, yes, yes.
Gosh.
The Labour Party has pledged an ambitious 2030 emissions reduction target of 43%. However, a target of 74% below 2005 levels would be needed if Australia was to contribute its, quote, fair share to keep global warming within 1.5 degrees centigrade, according to modelling by the University of Melbourne.
That's the last thing we need to hear. That's not necessarily good news.
No.
At all. The COVID crisis, the climate crisis are one and the same. It's the same mechanism. It's the same set of jerry-rigged, computer-modeled, pseudoscientific assumptions that underpin the whole crisis.
The Liberal National Party coalition, which currently forms the government, says it will reduce carbon emissions with technology, not taxes, if re-elected, and this will include investing in green hydrogen, okay, which is supported by many leading scientists apparently, but also some unproven technologies like carbon capture and storage. The Labour Party, on the other hand, led by Anthony Albanese, has proposed rolling out more solar and battery infrastructure. That doesn't sound like a good idea. Updating the electricity grid so it can handle more renewable energy.
Right. So Australian elections, their system of voting, from what we can gather,
it's compulsory. First of all, it's compulsory. You have to vote.
Federal elections using a preferential voting system whereby voters are required to mark preference for every candidate on the ballot paper. House of Representatives,
right.
Senate,
yeah.
And a preference for a designated number of preferences on a white ballot paper.
Right.
So the preferential voting.
Yeah, that's the single transferable vote. Mm. Yeah. If you're, if your bloke who comes last gets eliminated, his votes are redistributed.
Yeah. So is there going to be a tip in the balance of power? United Australia Party in the last 2 years had a lot of vocal members, Craig Kelly.
Yes.
People like that.
Yeah, there are a few.
They were pushing the envelope on a lot of those issues.
Absolutely. Well, they're the ones that took out the full page ad.
Clive Palmer.
That's right. About the WHO treaty.
Okay.
Yeah, that the so-called experts that the Guardian referred to had been denouncing. So there are certainly glimmers of hope, and you know, the forces seem to be in motion.
Yeah, so we fingers crossed. There's going to be some level of a realignment.
Yeah,
away from the establishment Australian deep state status quo.
Fingers crossed, but you know, how can we trust elections anywhere these days, Patrick?
Yeah, it's very difficult too. It's you remember this? You ever see the film The Falcon and the Snowman about Pine Gap?
Right,
listening facility.
I haven't seen it.
It's a great film in the golden age of cinema, 70s and 80s. But it was about a whistleblower from Pine Gap. So in some sense, Australia is still an occupied country with the U.S. deep state is well, you know, has penetrated the country for years. And people will argue they have some degree of influence over foreign policy and things like that.
Gough Whitlam.
Well,
deposed in the coup, wasn't he? That's effectively
a perfect example. I believe that was 1976.
Something like that.
Labor. He wanted to close Pine Gap. That was not going to happen if Washington had anything to say about it. But look, we're going to take a short break here with TNT Today's News Talk. I'm in studio with Basil Valentine. Very lovely to be with you, Basil, on this beautiful day here on the South Coast. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We'll be right back after these messages.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
If there is one issue in this election which should be the central feature, it should be the federal government's response to COVID and how the nation can avoid such a disastrous and tragic response in future. But the major parties are intent on pushing the false narrative and play the tune of their big business financial sponsors, which include big pharma companies profiting at Australia's expense. A few days ago we saw, disgustingly I might add, Labor leader Anthony Albanese dodge a simple question on vaccine mandates from a member of the public. "When are you going to put our workers back to work without mandates?" a woman asked. And all Albanese said was, be polite," and scurried away. And Prime Minister Scott Morrison is keen to sign away Australia's sovereignty in healthcare to our WHO treaty. We can do much better. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
For the news and views you can't hear anywhere else.
Everybody here wants information about what's going on.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to TNT Today's News Talk. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show. We're in the final segment of the final hour of this live broadcast on Thursday, and very pleased that riding shotgun with me in studio today is none other than Basil Valentine, the pundit, the poet, the Lothario.
Oh, steady.
So... Yeah, but enjoying the South Coast. Great vibe down here.
Yeah,
there's a lot going on.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like sun's shining.
It's a big festival.
Basically. Yeah, I hate to use the word normal, but you know,
it's a big change from what I'm used to.
Good.
It's a lot quieter where I am.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're combing through some of the big stories. We got a couple minutes left.
Yeah, we've got one here which we can't attest as to the veracity of. Have the Russians captured all the scientists and NATO personnel in the biolabs under the steel plant at Mariupol?
Who's asking that question?
The world.
Well, the real question is, are there any biolabs under the steel plant?
That's right.
And I am of the mind that there are not.
Right.
I'm of the mind there or not, because I checked into that story from the beginning, and I could not find any evidence that there were metabiota underground labs under Avastol plant in Mariupol. But it had been circulating, a lot of assumptions, you know, who's involved, what are the players, But I had questions about the actual existence of it. I was like, where is the evidence? Is it listed? And no, it just seems to be rumor.
Right.
As far as I know.
Yeah. Likewise, I saw a quote from Putin saying apparently he's got the captured biolab scientists. They've been taken to Moscow, and they're all going to be talking about how they've been employed in a mass depopulation agenda, da-da-da-da-da.
This from Benjamin Fulford?
Well, exactly. It sounds like that. We'll believe that when we see it.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it depends on this.
I think that's going to happen.
Consider the source. Yeah. Consider the source is what I say with all these things.
Yes.
So here's a mainstream story that I think we should talk about, because I think this is pretty profound. So the headline is this. A leaked memo says Biden administration is preparing for violence after abortion ruling. Now, preparing for violence in terms of expecting violence or
preparing violence.
Preparing violence.
Yeah.
This is a very subtle difference between preparing violence and preparing for violence.
Yes.
Right? So
particularly given the recent history of the FBI.
Well, yeah, and also considering the amount of federal informants running amok on January 6th.
Is what I mean.
Rabble-rousers.
So the whole phony governor assassination plot.
Oh, in Michigan.
Yeah.
During the elections.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trump supporters trying to kidnap the governor. It was fake.
Totally.
It's fake, but it swung votes. It swung votes in Michigan and made people sympathetic towards Gretchen Whitmer.
Gretchen Whitmer, that's it.
She's scary, that one. So this is two mainstream outlets reporting this, Axios and Fox News. Department of Homeland Security is preparing for an increase in political violence after the Supreme Court hands down its official ruling on Roe versus Wade, the abortion decision there. It's been stood for 50 years in the coming weeks, according to a leaked memo reported just yesterday. Okay, so this has been confirmed by two mainstream media outlets. May 13th memo revealing that federal law enforcement are investigating threats made on social media, a dozen there, burn down or storm the Supreme Court building. Pro-abortion rights activists begin making such threats earlier in the month when a draft majority opinion was leaked to Politico, indicating the court had voted to uphold Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban and overturn the landmark Roe v. Wade decision. So according to this, Summer of Rage is being planned. Pro-abortion protesters have called for a summer of rage a la George Floyd riots. Use your imagination of what that's going to look like, and not limited to Portland either, with the expectation that the court will roll back abortion rights. So this is how they're looking at this potential overturning of Roe v. Wade, that that'll mean that you won't have a right to get an abortion in America. That's not true. It just means it can be handed back to the states to decide. There might be some variations in terms of how they interpret where the cutoff point would be for that. That's more likely is going to be the result of this if Roe v. Wade is overturned. But the activists are going crazy. They're reacting. The media is egging this on. The CNNs and MSNBCs of the world are egging on the fanatics on this. So this is what this memo is saying. So they're expecting threats going to be made not only at the Supreme Court, but personally at the justices themselves at their homes.
Oh, yeah. They were all outside that one that Trump appointed recently. Kavanaugh? That's right.
Kavanaugh.
They were outside his
Amy
house.
Amy Coney Barrett as well. Yeah. Justice Roberts even.
Yeah. Wow.
So here, churches targeted. Churches are going to be targeted. Pro-life organizations going to be targeted. And this is going to persist and likely to increase following the issue of the court's ruling on this. So
it's all about divide and rule again. It's always distract people, separate them, get them fighting at each other's throats so they don't focus on the important things.
So the DHS thinks there's going to be a far right.
Always.
There's going to be a far right element. They're going to call these, this is quote, from the memo here, some radically or ethnically motivated violent extremists, in parentheses, far right, embracing a pro-life narrative,
That's right.
I love the language.
Yep.
May be linked to the perception of wanting to save white children. Can you believe this? Quote, save white children to fight white genocide. So this seems like more fantasy fiction.
It certainly does.
This is the stuff the FBI love to craft their sort of, you know, projects around with the informants in tow, the radicalization online, etc. We've all seen this before. The memo reportedly says all this and warns that extremist acts could come from pro-abortion radicals. So they're saying violence on both sides potentially here. Prepare for a summer of rage. Do you think this is feasible? I actually do not see this issue getting the type of traction that many thought it would get.
I hope you're right. It's a very emotive issue. People do feel very, very strongly about it.
Yep.
Far more so in the United States than in the UK. Frankly, here nobody gives a damn, you know, virtually. You know, it's a very small sort of anti-abortion campaign, but...
I can't see him burning down cities for this.
No.
But I can see agent provocateurs doing radical things.
Yes.
I can see bombs going off.
I hope you're wrong.
Well, we had this with the Weather Underground.
Yes.
They bombed Congress.
Yes.
They're freaking out about Buffalo Boy on January 6th.
That's right.
And the Weather Underground and some of these radical... communist groups or whatever, Marxist groups, they bomb in Congress. You know, they didn't shut down the country for it. They just, whatever, dealt with it, did the arrests. Some people did some time. Bill Ayers.
Yes.
Ended up, backing Barack Obama's career. So it's funny how all that comes full circle.
Couple more stories I've got.
Yeah, go on.
First of all, something we mentioned yesterday, big things happening in Pakistan.
Imran Khan.
Yeah, absolutely. He's just appointed former SSG commando as his personal security officer.
So he announced that he released a list of names that are plotting to threaten to kill him, to assassinate him.
That's right.
Publicly, he released the names, I'm told.
Lieutenant Colonel retired Asim has been appointed security in charge of Chairman Imran Khan. He claimed during a recent rally in Sialkot that a conspiracy was being hatched to take his life, and he has recorded a video sharing the news of those responsible if anything happened to him. Wow. Big stuff. It's always big stuff in Pakistan. They don't play for, you know, they don't play for peanuts.
No, Pakistan is a really important piece on the geopolitical chessboard.
Yeah.
And Imran Khan is, to a lot of people's understanding of this, he is a genuine populist leader.
Yes.
So he's a genuine populist leader. Doesn't come from any of the traditional ruling families.
Right. I think you're right.
That have a deadlock on Pakistani power, right?
Right. He's not a Bhutto and he's certainly not a army placeman.
Like Musharraf.
That's right.
Yeah. So that means he says, I'm not going to be, beholden to the Western agenda.
He... listeners might not know, he went to Oxford University, where he distinguished himself as a cricketer more than anything else, and subsequently became a test cricketer of tremendous distinction as a fast bowler and all-rounder batsman, captain of Pakistan, you know, absolutely glittering cricket career before going into politics.
Yeah.
Briefly married to Jemima Goldsmith. I don't think they're still together, but he's an impressive figure. There's no doubt about it, you know. And bright, and I may be wrong, Patrick, but I think he generally wants best for the people of Pakistan. Peace, he wants economic security. He is not a nutcase, and he's not bought and paid for, and he's not signed up to all the insanity we've been talking about.
He doesn't want his country to be airstrip one for the United States military or NATO. So he's made that clear.
Right.
We're not a base for the West.
Yeah.
So he wants to participate in China's Belt and Road Initiative.
Right.
You've got the Gwadar port on the southern coast of Pakistan. And that's a site of Baluchi terrorist attacks. And so the Baluchistan brigade, probably backed by the West, is a typical cutout independence, you know, movement.
Yes.
So they're being hit in a number of different directions, Pakistan.
So Imran has going to have 94, a security detail of 94. We were speculating about this yesterday. I thought he might have 60 men or something. 22 from the Islamabad police and 72 from the Frontier Constabulary. No messing about.
And someone to test the food.
In addition, 26 officers from the security services and 9 military personnel will also be made available. That's a hell of a staff, isn't it? You know, well over 100 people in your security. It's a small army, you know. But fair enough, the stakes are high. I mean, I think he's calling for fresh elections, which I think he's confident he'll win, you know. And if you win, you know, isn't the West always talking about democracy? If you win the election, you're in power. That's the way it's supposed to work, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, so, it's funny you were mentioning Gough Whitlam before the break, Australian PM, Labor PM, in the mid-70s, was taken out in a similar type of a parliamentary coup. I think it was
the
Inspector General, the Auditor General or something, basically yanked him from power.
That's right.
Imran Khan was taken out by parliamentary fiat, right? There's a vote of no confidence.
That's right.
And so clearly, I mean, did you see the crowds that he was drawing?
That's right.
I mean, they're talking, there's 100,000.
Oh, 1,000. You know, they get big crowds there. They love their political rallies.
100,000 people.
Absolutely.
So he's not unpopular.
Oh, no, on the contrary. And I think he's been made more popular by being deposed.
Yeah, his street cred skyrocketed since the coup. He accuses the United States of orchestrating that coup.
Absolutely.
So I tend to believe that he's probably correct on that. But what I really loved about what I saw from this guy is the fact that both him and Narendra Modi, who's also a populist leader in India, just next door. So Modi and Khan complimenting each other on their independence in the face of pressure to impose sanctions on Russia. So that's to see Pakistan and India agreeing on anything, and to see their leaders giving some compliment.
Oh, yeah.
It, to me,
they've been virtually been a war
that has
within the last 20 years.
That has a lot of meaning.
It's been shooting across the border, you know.
So certain imperial powers and former imperial powers will want to see those two countries divided. They want to see them at each other's throats, and they'd like to see them with markedly different foreign policy, or to be both pro-Western.
Yep.
And the fact that they're not, and that they might see some benefit in other relationships and alliances, I think is significant.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to, the West, US, UK will do anything to break that up.
Right.
I think, and bring them to heel again. So shuttle diplomacy, if that doesn't work, send in the jackals. If that doesn't work, send in the tanks. You know, this John Perkins is Confessions of an Economic Hitman. That was his.
Yeah.
3 degrees of...
One more story, Patrick.
Go ahead. We've got 3 minutes left.
Neither of us will see 40 again, except on a door, as they say, but it may not be downhill all the way. Apparently, infusions of cerebrospinal fluid can reverse the aging process.
Oh, really?
And give you a new youth, improve the memory, everything else. So
that's not going to be available in the NHS, though, is it?
Maybe it's already happening, you know.
Is that the secret to
clogging? I don't know whether it's your own or somebody else's cerebrospinal fluid. I don't think I really want anybody else's.
Is that what Fauci's doing?
You know, people don't seem to be able to grow old gracefully, do they, these days?
He doesn't want to retire. Fauci, they asked him, would you stay if Donald Trump was reelected?
Yeah, but he said he wouldn't serve under Trump again.
Yeah, but that's 2024. Why is he even working at the age of 85? That's how old he'll be in 2024. So what happened to retirement? Nobody retires anymore.
No, that's right. The U.S. is a gerontocracy, isn't it? That incoherent, mumbling fool. Well, fill in the blank. Pelosi, Biden, you know.
Fauci.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you got the rest of them. Gosh, Schumer. Do you know what Schumer said? He sent a letter to one of the U.S. agencies saying, I think it was Department of Homeland Security, saying Fox News is responsible for the Buffalo mass shooting because of the words of Tucker Carlson, radicalized.
Oh, yeah.
That they should be closed down.
Oh, that it should be closed down.
Yeah. It's a Senate head.
Yeah. Ordering, Senate Majority Leader.
Ordering to have a mainstream media outlet shut down because they're on the other side of the political aisle. Can you believe this? This is beyond.
Yeah, I mean, it's extraordinary that somebody goes that far. But of course, very different when the boot is on the other foot. We had the black supremacist who drove the truck in the Christmas parade at Waukesha. One could equally say that he had been radicalized, his racial hate.
By MSNBC.
Exactly.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you can make the argument. My position has always been this. I don't believe we should censor any of these outlets, but they should be, people should be allowed to be on there and in the debate, okay?
Right.
So you can be MSNBC, go ahead, CNN, go ahead, Fox, go ahead, but allow us and people like us in independent media to be in that debate and that conversation
That's
as well.
That's the definition of a liberal society, of a free society.
And the best ideas will rise to the top.
Indeed.
And the best ideas will rise to the top. Like media outlets like TNT Radio, the home of freedom and the voice of liberty. And I'm your host, Patrick Hankson. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the program, Basil Valentine.
Thank you, Patrick.
And also F. William Engdahl and Miles of Truth. Thank you guys as well in hours 1 and 2. Listen, that's it for this week. You guys have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. All the best. And catch us on the Sunday Wire at 21st Century Wire this weekend on Sunday. Got a great program lined up for you there as well. All the best.